We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, I'm talking about this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, my monologue a minute ago, if you heard it, the 4th Alabama. Let me just encourage you guys to check it out. So you can Google them as 4th Alabama. You can Google them as 167th Infantry Regiment. I would add World War I to all of that. You'll get great pictures that just clearly show what it was like for the state when they received back their young men. And like I said, 616 of them didn't come home. So it was it had an amazing impact. There was pretty much not a single county in this state that did not feel the impact of that deployment. And when I said earlier that that they changed the face of the state, they did. I mean, these guys came home, and some of them went on to be, you know, true leaders of the state in industry and politics and in everything. And there were also some serious heroics in those guys. Like I mentioned, just F Company from Gadsden alone, the picture that I've got, there's two guys wearing Distinguished Service Crosses on their chest. And it's just amazing to think that at a time when Alabama was considered just a rural, small, kind of out-of-the-way state, you know, mostly agricultural, which just, you know, just the way it was, that the state pretty much began to change after that war. And there's a lot of things that people might say or wonder about Alabama over the years. I'll be honest with you. I think the legacy of Alabama, if you really got down in the weeds and you began to recognize the extent that Alabama has impacted history, you would have to add the 167th into it, because they truly did. Especially when you consider that the things they did on the battlefield were considered to be pivotal in the entire war. So anyway, it's a great storyline, and I mentioned before that there's a good book. So if you check out the rightsideradio.org website, there's a recommended reading list on there. I've got a tab that says recommended reading, and if you scroll down in it, you'll see that one of the books is called Send the Alabamians, written by a guy named Rod Frazier from Montgomery. It's an amazing book. It's very detailed. I mean, it's a fact-oriented book. It's taken from dispatches, journals, news articles. Lots of great illustrations in it, but Send the Alabamians, the cover of the book actually has the statue that I'm talking about that's on the battlefield at Croix Rouge Farm. So worth the knowing, and it's also so worth the telling. So if you want to tell your kids about things that famous Alabamians have done, or maybe something that Memorial Day stands for, you might want to reach back in history and tell them that at a time when they were needed the most, Alabamians went to the far side of the world and maybe even changed the world. All right, there's my mini monologue. How about that? Let me jump on in here, my first dipper. I'm changing gears on you. The woke-up call. I wish I had thought this name up myself. I had a different title for this particular dipper. And then as I'm doing my resourcing, I found an article from Forbes from January of this year. And I thought, well, that's the name of the dipper now, the woke up call. In fact, I wish I'd thought of it myself. But here's the deal. Whether it be DEI or just liberal progressivism or LGBTQ agendas or whatever the case may be, we are seeing right now, left and right, where academia and corporate America and even government have just lost their way. They have literally lost their actual mission. Like, if they had to find their mission statement again, they might have to dust it off because they hadn't seen the light of day in so long. Because the mission should be driving the organizational structure and the organizational effort. And the mission right now is getting just lost so often in what I would call the unnecessaries, the first world problems, the sideline issues, the sidebars. Story here that I took the title from Forbes January of this year, woke up call, universities need a brand reboot. And what it basically says is, hey, universities, you guys have a brand the same as corporate America does. You guys You guys have a mission statement, right? You have a product which is academically trained students. Points out here, it says, many of America's most renowned colleges and universities have been in the headlines now for all the wrong reasons, and they have the potential to break their brands. It says, while diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives are critical factors that contribute to any school's environment, in recent years, many top colleges have begun to lose their way. Getting carefully calibrated DEI motions and messaging, which threaten to overtake communication of their primary mission, that which their brand stands for. And it goes on to say, basically, that the mission statement is supposed to be the North Star of the organization. It's supposed to be the thing that drives the train on everything, right? When you reach out for funding, it's to fund the main mission. It's not to fund the sideline stuff that you don't really stand for. I mean, what if I told you that Right Side Radio was doing everything it could to stay on the air while at the same time we were spending money to, build something out in the parking lot that made no sense? Our job today is to speak on the radio, but we're spending a lot of money right now buying cars for people. I mean, you would look at me and go, what are you doing? You're refocusing all your resources on the wrong place. Remember the main mission. And the main mission for us is every single day to do what I call the four E's, to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain our audience on what it means to be a conservative in today's world. Universities are losing their main mission. They are, and it's sad to watch. So how about this? Get back to the basics. Maybe they need a woke-up call. So it says, who are the customers? First of all, think about that. Who are your customers? Hey, universities, who's your customers? Well, it's stakeholders like, you know, faculty and students and applicants, but ultimately it's the students. And it says they should rely on the mission and values created. They should not rely on the mission and values created by committees because it gets so broad. Well, we have a good idea. We're going to form a new committee and we're going to sit over here and we're going to think up neat stuff that we should all try and stand for. In doing so, they lose their messaging. They prioritize supporting efforts over their primary. It says here, imagine if FedEx says, we can't deliver your package on time, but we're doing a lot of nice things. You'd be looking at them going, I just want my package. Well, that's where we are right now. I mean, it's as if educational America is turning on its head. I look at it right now and I find I like the fight we're having over libraries right now. You look at it and go, okay, libraries, what is your job? Books. Your job is to provide an environment for books to be checked out by others. It is not to make sure that children have access to pornographic material. It is not to make sure that children absolutely have access to diversity, equity, and inclusion messages. It is not to make sure, in your opinion, that the LGBTQ agenda is firmly represented within the books. It's just to provide books that are right and able in content and available to those who want to patronize the library. And if those who patronize the library don't want the books, maybe you take them off your shelf. And if the folks in, San Francisco really want gay porn in the kiddie section, well, maybe that should be a San Francisco thing. It doesn't mean you have to adopt it in Alabama. Well, the same is true for our universities. Get back to teaching kids. So Victor Davis Hanson wrote a piece that came out in the New York Post a year and a half ago. By the way, every time I read anything Victor Davis Hanson wrote, I feel like I should get continuing education credit for it. It's that good. I mean, the guy is, he's a deep thinker, but he's also a communicator. It's amazing. He starts off by saying, Ernest Hemingway wrote, how do you go bankrupt? And the answer was two ways, gradually and then suddenly. And he points out that what we've been seeing in the woke university implosion, he calls it, is that there's been a gradual decline, and then all of a sudden, it is accelerated. He says, left-wing indoctrination, administrative bloat, obsessions with racial preferences, arcane jargon-filled research, and campus-wide intolerance of diverse thought shortchange students and further alienated the public and often enrage their alumni. By the way, the alumni are the ones who put the endowments on the college, right? Political indoctrination, watered-down courses, Zoom courses, a declining pool of students, soaring costs, all prompt the public to ask the question, what are y'all doing? Undergraduate enrollment, he says, has dropped by more than 650,000 students in the past year prior to him writing this, which was 2022. Professors, he says, hector students about toxic masculinity and gender studies proliferate. If the plan was to drive males off the campus, they've succeeded beyond their wildest expectations because males have dropped by about 71% in the current shortfalls, or make up 71% of the current shortfalls. History majors down by 50% in the last 20 years. English majors fallen by a third. Yale University has 150% more administrative positions than it did two decades ago, but the number of professors only increased by 10%. Wow. It says in a new high-low, Stanford University recently enrolled 16,937 undergraduate and graduate students, but they have 15,750 administrative staff. That's almost a one-to-one. Do you need that much? Probably not. It says to accommodate radical diversity in reengineering, the only demographic deemed expendable are apparently white males. Yeah. Universities, it says, are also quietly junking their test score requirements. Ironically, these time-honored standardized tests were designed to offer those from underprivileged backgrounds a competitive opportunity to get into the schools. Now that they're throwing the tests away, only those with money or that fit the woke agenda are getting in. Listen, the woke-up call is upon them. But when we come back from this break here in just a minute, I'm gonna give you guys some serious stuff to consider about what is happening in our university environments. It's pretty epic. Some good, some bad. Overall, they need a woke-up call in a big, big way. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower up in here. Hey, so I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper, and y'all are welcome to text in, call in. Number's 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Richard T. from Madison takes issue with the GOP. When I said that about having a mission statement for the colleges, he says, what's the mission statement of the GOP? It's not conservatism, he says. It's not low taxes. It's not defending the Constitution. It appears to support Donald Trump at all costs and downgrade our judicial system. Thank you for the information on the Alabama Infantry Unit. Well, Richard T., that's certainly your opinion. I disagree with it. No, I think if you look at the mission statement, they're pursuing it. And by the way, downgrade the judicial system. If you mean by who Donald Trump appointed to the process of being a judge, no. I think they wind up improving it. If you're talking about the lawfare being foisted upon the world by the Democrats right now, then I would say that's not Donald Trump. John from Harvest says, by the way, I'm glad we're pushing back against this DEI garbage. I hope the wokies don't get too crazy. Tolerance is a virtue, but only in relation to other virtues. When the other virtues are not taught, then we get what Leo Strauss said was, quote, absolute tolerance is altogether impossible. The allegedly absolute tolerance turns to ferocious hatred of those who have stated clearly and most forcefully that there are unchangeable standards found in the nature of man and the nature of things. That is a highly intellectual text. It was also very long, but it was good. It was very good. John from Harvest, thank you, man.
Was that a quote from somebody or was that
Yeah, he was quoting Leo Strauss. Okay. Yeah, he had it in quotation marks. Anyway, good stuff. Hey, listen, so I'm doing this thing right now, the woke-up call, and I'm talking about, in particular, the fact that academia appears to have just lost their way. And I mentioned the mission statement. You go back to your first love. It's like a company. I was actually talking with some clients of mine recently, and they're, as a company, they were having some struggles, and we were discussing it. And I pointed out, I said, well, you know, the end result is it may be that you've gotten away from the first love, the thing that actually put this company on the map, that made it money. You've begun doing some other things and they become distractions from the ability to get the real job done, which is the first mission. Same is true for academia. When they're so busy getting out there and doing all the things that aren't academic, well, then maybe there's something that needs to be examined. I got several things here, and I'm trying to. I tell you what, I'm going to jump down in my pile and grab this one first because the story was so amazing. Here's a classic example. Story on the Daily Wire came out yesterday. The headline on it is "Activism Over Education," and it talks about particularly University of Louisville, the Louis D. Brandeis School of Law. So Brandeis School of Law has been a pretty decent law school for a long time. Right up there in Louisville, Kentucky. They recently had students raising their eyebrows going, what is happening right now? As the law school hosted a drag story hour in which one of the professors dressed up as a woman and told a story about gay rabbits with a member of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence assisting. Okay. And they're right to question. I mean, if it's an off hours, I guess, but this is apparently a sanctioned on-campus event. Part of the university's Drag Me to Class fundraiser to raise money for students to attend LGBT-focused Lavender Law Conference in the nation's capital. Students were actually fuming over projections that the law school has taken a massive dive in the U.S. News and World Report's upcoming law school rankings. So here's the deal. Students are telling Daily Wire, where I got the story, that here they are paying good money for tuition to go to a school that appears to have lost its way and are so busy focusing on the non-essentials and on the woke policies and woke issues that they're dropping exponentially in the ranks. Well, how far did they drop? 37 points in 1 year. U.S. News and World Report just dropped them from 99 to 136 in the overall rankings. It's a 37-spot drop, y'all. Largest of any school on the list. Faculty and students are all pointing fingers at each other. Here's the thing. Their first-time bar exam passage rate, which, you know, that's what you exist for. You're a law school. You educate people in the law so that they can become lawyers. And the only way they can become lawyers is to pass the bar exam. So part of your job is to give them the base of knowledge necessary to pass the bar. And then they begin to look at, how do your graduates actually do? The rate used to sit at 89%, dropped to 75%. It had been 65% just right before that. So their rates, they're dropping. They're not good. By comparison, the number one law school in the country, Stanford, actually had a first-time bar passage rate of 94%. All right, but it's not just this one guy doing a drag me, you know, to class gay fundraiser. They've got all kinds of classes that the students are pointing out, like gender law and policy, Afro-American women and reproductive justice, critical race theory, reproductive rights and justice. They had a class on critical race theory that, quote, examined the fundamental propositions of race and racism in society and critique the law as legitimizing force for advancing systemic racism and structural inequality, taught by one of their professors. Why? They've got classes on environmental law that don't really teach environmental law. When I took environmental law, it was on, you know, lawsuits related to like mass tort litigation for chemical spills and that kind of stuff. No, this one focuses on environmental justice and accuses white people of racism. Oh, good. Things like the inequitable vulnerabilities of communities through a lens of climate change and systemic racism and anti-colonialism. No wonder they're dropping in the numbers. But y'all, they're also teaching, by the way, that microaggressions are a big thing. They're lawyers. This is an adversarial profession. You will be in court one day, and guess what? Your job is to disagree with the other side, and you're worried about microaggressions? Well, I got more on this when we get back. Yeah, we're going to continue on. The woke up call continues. And Brandeis University just got their woke up call. They just dropped in the rankings 37 points. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this Friday. Friday of a long weekend for many of you. I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper, and I'll take it here for a little bit longer. So the woke-up call. What we're seeing right now is that wokeness and DEI in the academic environment has gotten so rampant that some of our most prestigious institutions of higher learning are just falling by the wayside. Well, one of them I just mentioned a moment ago got a wake-up call. Brandeis School of Law at University of Louisville just got dropped from 99 to 136 in the nationwide rankings in the middle of a massive amount of wokeness. And by the way, I was in the middle of telling you right before the break that the law school is even teaching kids to, you know, watch out for microaggressions. They're training to be lawyers. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, if I were in need of legal counsel myself and I wanted a lawyer and I walked in and the lawyer looked timid and shy and said, I don't, listen, I need to know, are you going to say anything mean today? Because I don't think I can handle that. I'm back out the door looking for another lawyer. I want a lawyer who's going to wear somebody out. I want a lawyer that when I have a legal need is going to wind up taking them to task on it. Going to go full up Ranger law on them. That's what I'm looking for. Everything ethical, but everything straight up and in your face. That's, look, the practice of law is an adversarial profession, and you don't have to be adversarial to do it, but you have to recognize you have an adversary on the other side, and you're going to hear stuff you don't like. Not at Brandeis. Brandeis is teaching them. You've got to go out there and find the nice way to say things and avoid those microaggressions. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, it says. Those who identify as LGBTQ with disabilities, those from international backgrounds, and others who've been historically marginalized or underrepresented are taking the lead in everything right now. The professor, by the way, who participated in that drag fundraiser I told you about at the law school, he also gave students tips on drag activism. He ran for Congress a few years ago. He also brags about being one of the lawyers who helped to sue Donald Trump. He supports abolishing immigrations and customs enforcement. Great. How about the other guy, a professor named Enid Trucio-Haynes? It's a hyphenated name. I've told you before, I'm always leery when I see the hyphenated name. Like you can't decide what you want to do? Just pick one. The hyphenated name, Enid Trucio-Haynes, an immigration and civil rights professor, advocated against a proposed Kentucky bill that would have given law enforcement more tools to crack down on illegal immigration. He's also linked to the ACLU. Oh, good. How about another one? Justin Walker was actually a conservative professor from Brandeis who was appointed by Trump to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. That's a big honor. That's where your peers in academia look at you and go, good on you, man. That's very cool. No. The liberal professors at Brandeis decided to write letters saying they could not support his nomination. Why? Because he was a conservative. How about the Dean of Academic Affairs? Joanne Sweeney calls herself an advocate of feminist jurisprudence. Melanie Jacobs, the school's dean, talks about the fact that unborn babies are nothing more than a mass of cells and advocates and justifies abortion. It just goes on and on. Is there any wonder that Brandeis has slipped? Because you know why? They have lost their mission and they are literally stepping off into activism. They have decided to go full on woke to the point that they lose the ability then to train good lawyers. Now, let me ask you a question. You're laying on the operating table and you're about to, you know, have somebody perform surgery. And you look up and you see your doctor and you say, hi, doc. This is something you're used to doing? No, I really don't understand how it works, but I'm going to do the best I can. Do you go under the anesthesia at that point? Or do you try to unstrap yourself from the table? Right now, we've got, for instance, one of the best law medical schools in the nation at UCLA has just gone to the point that it literally cannot produce doctors who know much on a regular basis. Story here on the Free Beacon came out yesterday. The Free Beacon, a failed medical school, how racial preferences have been supposedly outlawed in California are persisting at UCLA. So UCLA is a tough med school, right? It is called the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine. 14,000 people apply every year. Only 173 chosen. That's a high bar, right? The median student has basically a 3.8 undergraduate GPA, has taken all kinds of difficult science courses, graduates in the 88th percentile on the Medical College Admissions Test, the MCAT. Yeah, but apparently at UCLA, they have just hired somebody named Jennifer Lucero, who is the Dean of Admissions. And Jennifer Lucero has made it her mission in life to make sure that they are bringing in people with demographics she approves of, and she chews out anybody who says otherwise. It's to the point that people are resigning from the admissions committee because they don't want to deal with her anymore. Like, for instance, when a recent black applicant had test scores and grades that were far below the averages, she chewed out and called racist anybody who said that we don't think this person fits what we need as a student. She went on to do so in such a way that people began to resign from the committee, and someone actually wondered, if this applicant had been a white male or an Asian female, for that matter, would we have had that much discussion? And the answer is probably no. By the way, I will tell you this. This article is written with input from members of the admissions committee. And, oh, by the way, they reached out to Lucero herself for a comment, and she declined to comment. But it goes on to say they're basically a failed medical school right now. They have gotten to the point now that upwards of 50% of the students are failing the standardized tests on things like emergency medicine, family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics. These are called shelf exams. Every time you complete one of your clinical rotations as a student, you take one of these exams, test your basic knowledge, right? It also plays a pivotal role in getting a residency. Only 5% of students nationwide tend to fail. You got a tenfold increase in that. Up to 50% at UCLA right now are failing. Why? Because they're taking in kids who aren't prepared for this and who can't meet the standards. But hey, they meet the demographics. That's all that matters, right? Well, when you lose your mission, yeah. Their job is what? Train doctors. Train people to be skilled medical professionals. That's all they exist for. No, not in this environment. Led by Lucero, it says, who chairs also the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Department at UCLA's Anesthesiology Department. Black and Latino applicants are getting a pass for subpar metrics, and it basically says they're completely disregarding grades and achievement. And she will not, by the way, suffer anyone who wants to dissent. Calls them racist, calls them homophobic, says that they are basically violating the norms of society, and makes their life miserable if they dare to speak out. She also told a doctor recently who voiced concerns that they didn't have any right to opinion because they weren't BIPOC. BIPOC.
Black, what's that mean?
Yeah, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. BIPOC.
I don't know about you, but I don't care if my doctor is, if the majority of them are Black, White, Asian, as long as they know what they're doing.
Go figure.
Then they could be my doctor.
You're a radical. What is wrong with you? You mean you would lay there on the table and be okay with someone who just, you know, looks different than you actually doing the operation?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
If you know what you're doing.
That's radical.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it should be, though, dude, right? I mean, that's what you want is you want the most qualified individual to be your doctor, to be your lawyer, to be, for that matter, the person who teaches your kids.
I think you just made up a new job, a doctor.
A doctor, okay.
A there lawyer doctor.
Thank you very much. Nobody was supposed to catch that. You had to go ahead and call it out. That's fine. Hey, but by the way, so they got their wake-up call, their woke-up call, by the way. Their woke-up call was they just dropped in the rankings. They just went down in a big, big way. You're looking at right now, UCLA has just become the school that people are recognizing. You can apply here, and you might get in, especially if you're, you know, of a minority demographic. But hey, do you really want to get into a school where they just got back the results that show that they have fallen from sixth place in the nation to 18th place in 1 year, and that 50% of their students are failing standardized tests? Or do you want to go to the law school like Brandeis that dropped from 99th to 136th, 37 points in 1 year. Why? Because they're losing their mission, man. Listen, when we get back from this break, I'll wrap this up, but I'll tell you, we're starting to see some pushback. It's not just the woke-up call on the rankings. There's actually some effort being made to make change. I'll tell you about that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like saving the world one soundbite at a time. So let's wrap this up. The woke-up call. There's several ways a woke-up call can work. The first is these rankings I told you about. Suddenly the alumni and the boards of trustees are looking at it going, what in God's name? Hang on a second. Why are we presiding over something that is dropping in? Because those rankings, that's the bread and butter, man. You know, it's like a business has a profit margin. Educational institutions have graduation rates, they have rankings, and they have the ability then to say, here we are, we're prestigious because of these things. Now, I'll be honest with you, part of it also is the general public has to go, we're not coming to you anymore. I mean, why would you think for a second that 14,000 applicants are going to continue to apply to UCLA if they know that they may not get the education that it would take to they'd be paying for, right? Well, the same is true for places like Harvard, you know, and others that has just become so woke that you look at it and go, okay, Why would I send my kid there? Why would I pay that tuition? Why would I run the risk that they will spend all their time being locked out of classes by activists and whatever else, or being chased around by people who, you know, diss on them for their beliefs? Well, the pushback is happening. On Harvard University's campus, there were 13 students, should have been more in my opinion, but there were 13 students that just the other day were not allowed to graduate. And you got to know there's some moms and dads that are having a duck right now. You did what, young man? Listen to me, little lady. You went to that college and we paid for this, or you had that scholarship. You would have had a degree from Harvard and they won't give it to you now because why? You wanted to camp out on the campus and rage about Palestine? So yeah, CBS reports that Harvard University's commencement had some protests on Thursday, and some graduates even walked out after the school announced that 13 of their students who had participated in a pro-Palestinian encampment would not be receiving their degree. Here's the thing, man. Those kids were mollycoddled all along the way. They were encouraged by some faculty, by the way. And some of them decided to disregard every warning, and they refused to take down their tents. The very last students, the ones who refused to leave after a deadline was given, were told, guess what? You're no longer in good standing, and by our bylaws, you have to be in good standing to receive your degree. You're allowed to come to commencement if you want to. You can wear a robe and a cap, but you're not going to be called up on stage to get a diploma. And you got to know that jerked a knot in some of them, and I'm hoping it did. Pro-Palestinian protesters thought it was the most horrible thing. We support these students, said one of them. We insist that Harvard remove these penalties against them. Why? I'll tell you right now, that's the best thing that could have happened, and it probably should have happened to more of them. How about this? UNC Chapel Hill, I told you the other day that a vote was coming. Not UNC Chapel Hill, UNC, the entire University of North Carolina system, sort of like UA has a system here with UAB, UAH, the main campus, and others. The Board of Governors for the entire University of North Carolina system just voted yesterday afternoon to replace all of the DEI policies at the 17 schools they oversee. 17 campuses with a combined $90 million worth of salaries for DEI positions decided, you know what, we are done with this. Now, part of it is they were being pushed by state law. New state law, much like Alabama, had been passed in the North Carolina General Assembly, right? But the bottom line is, they could have fought it, they could have pushed back, but you know what they did? They got their woke-up call, and they decided, enough of this, $90 million? Well, of course they got the protests. People outside the door protesting, don't you make those changes, we need DEI, you don't value the black and brown students, you're trying to change history, you're a revisionist. Guess what? They voted. All 24 members with only two dissents voted on it. And DEI initiatives at all those public universities, all 17 campuses, are being abolished, joining states like Florida, Texas, and Alabama. So, folks, I'm just telling you, the woke-up call is upon us. And we're starting to see the push. Because I think what's happened is woke never knows when to quit. Woke never knows when to stop. Woke never realizes when it's worn out its welcome to the point that it is no longer welcome. Woke is going to wind up being its own worst enemy, generally speaking, because liberal progressives are never satisfied. And when you give them what they want, they will find a moment to breathe, and then they'll come back for more. They are the dregs of culture, because liberal progressives are always trying to progress to the next thing they can get. And they are never satisfied. And these campuses that are making these changes and the fact that they're getting woke up calls, I'm just telling you right now, UCLA Medical School, I hope they come back online and their board of trustees grab hold of it. I hope that the article written about Brandeis Law School at University of Louisville, I hope the board of trustees look at it and go, what are y'all doing? How about you get rid of this DEI crap, and how about you stop doing drag queen story hour on campus and get back to teaching the law in such a way that our bar passage rate actually improves. Or UCLA actually trains doctors that can pass their tests, 50% of them failing. Harvard University, 13 students didn't even get their degrees. Why? Because they were being encouraged by faculty and activists who were allowed on campus to just continue to rage about Palestine. And the school let them do it way too long, but then the school finally had to take a stand and say, yeah, we're not going to give you a degree. 13 kids, should have been more. And the UNC Board of Trustees, or excuse me, the Board of Governors for the entire UNC system, $90 million they spent last year. $90 million on DEI initiatives and DEI positions, all of which just went away. That's $90 million that could have been used for something more mission-specific, like, I don't know, teaching kids. It's amazing. All right, we're going to be switching gears when we get back from the break here momentarily. I'm going to be moving into a subject that, it's a little scary. I'm calling it the national insecurity discussion. I do this periodically where I look at things that are happening on Biden's watch, and I'm wondering, is our national security being threatened? Is it? I say yes. And when I tell you some of the stories about who's coming across our southern border on a regular basis and some of the events that have occurred that are pretty awful and mysterious at the same time, it ain't good. National insecurity coming up next. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.